This show was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kanepes, Hawke's Bay's community access radio station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for enabling us to put Hawke's Bay voices on air.
Morena listeners, I'm David from the Citizens Advice Bureau in Hastings, and I'm here with my colleague Denise. And we're going to discuss today issues to do with tenancy. The issues are complex, and so we're going to make this session work in this way. Denise is going to talk about some of the differences between tenancy and boarding, what is the difference between a fixed tenancy and a periodic tenancy, the rights and obligations of the tenant and the rights and obligations of landlords. I'm going to use three case studies to show how some of these issues apply and what people's rights and obligations are in respect to boarding, tenancy, renting, and so on. So I'm going to hand over to Denise now, and she will begin by talking about some of the issues which are significant. But before I do that, I'd just like to remind you that all the information that we are discussing is available on the Citizens Advice Bureau public website. It's easy to find, and in the very middle of the homepage is a big panel with the two words, Ask Us. So if you put a question in there, you'll likely get the information that relates to the question. That's the information that we're using today. So this is public domain information which is available to anyone. The other thing which that information does is it links you to the relevant government departments, particularly in this case to tenancy services, where all the official information that governs the issues we're talking about is contained. So we will remind you about that as we go through the session this morning. Okay, now over to Denise.
Morning, listeners. Thank you, David. So we're going to start just by looking at the differences in the terms of tenancy. And one of the questions that often we will ask when we get a problem presented to us is whether it is a periodic or a fixed-term tenancy. So a periodic tenancy is one that has no fixed date for the end of the tenancy. In this sort of tenancy, both the tenant and the landlord can end it by giving a date. And in most cases now, that is 90 days. A fixed-term tenancy has a start date and an end date, and it runs for a set amount of time, and normally the tenancy can't be ended before the agreed-upon date. So it's important to know which of those sort of tenancies you're going into. One of the other sort of tenancy that is available is a service tenancy, and this is where an employer provides accommodation for an employee. Service tenancies have special rules relating to the rent paid in advance and ending the tenancy. So often that may come out of the tenancy, out of the tenant's wages. And then a boarding house tenancy is where the rental property is or is intended to be rented by at least six tenants. Each tenant rents their own room in the property and they share communal facilities, for example, the kitchen, the laundry. And tenancies last for 28 days or more. So what happens if there's no tenancy agreement? And sometimes we come across this problem as well. Now, it's a legal requirement for the terms of your tenancy to have a tenancy agreement. If a landlord doesn't provide a written, signed tenancy agreement and ensure that a copy is given to the tenant, it's breaking the law and it could be fined. Now, even if there isn't a written tenancy agreement, the tenant and the landlord still have to comply with their obligations under the Residential Tenancy Act. So those sort of things are the notice that needs to be given, the bond, the dispute resolution. But if you don't have a written tenancy agreement, it's going to be more difficult for either the tenant or the landlord to prove what they have agreed to beyond their legal protections. That's why it's always important to have everything in writing. David.
Okay, thank you, Denise. So I'm going to talk about a particular inquiry that we received at the Bureau in general terms. So this was a client who had been renting a property for 6 years. She and her family have been in this property for that time. And the problem which she contacted us about was to do with black mould, a problem which emerged about 6 months after they rented this property. To begin with, it wasn't particularly serious, and the client cleaned with Janola, wiped and so on, but the problem has got worse. Now, the client has a young family and clearly is concerned for their health, and particularly in the winter months when, you know, it's cold, damp. So the landlord has been asked about this several times but hasn't done anything about it. So the client wanted to know what she could do. Well, there is a document that the tenancy services provide where you can download a template. This is an issue of healthy homes. And so there's a template that you can download that you're able to send to your landlord, which states in clear language the health standard related issue and asks for the landlord to rectify it. Now, because it's an official template, then you fill in your details, but the way in which it's worded is clear, it's non-emotive, it's factual, so because it comes from a government agency, it's not something which people could take exception to. So that's one particular avenue of help that this client was given. But also, there are other things which the client could do in this case. And the Healthy Home Standards covers things like heating, insulation, ventilation, moisture and drainage, draft stopping, and there are deadlines set for those standards to be applied to properties. In general, we're talking about the standards beginning in July 2021, and by July 2024, there must be full compliance. So all these standards are very clearly set out on the Tenancy Services website. And if you were in a situation where you needed to notify your landlord of the problem, then a good pattern to follow would be when you noticed the problem first and when you first reported it, how often you had asked the landlord to deal with this problem, the things that you personally have done to try and deal with the problem, and what your concerns are, you know, why this problem is being notified to the landlord, what your particular concerns are. In the case of the client I'm thinking of, it was the health of the family. And then finally, you know, what response, if any, had come from the landlord. Those are the kinds of things that you would be asked if it was necessary to go to the tenancy tribunal to have this sort of problem fixed. In other words, if the landlord didn't respond positively. So help is there. If you have a problem like that and you're not exactly sure where to find the information, you can always call Citizens Advice Bureau. We can put you in touch with this information. The information is set up in a way that everybody has the opportunity to set up their own resolution process. So I think that's, you know, it's a very good way of dealing with a problem. The Tenancy Services website is extremely helpful for clients who have issues. So back to Denise.
Okay, so, you know, we're talking a lot about the Tenancy Services website, and this relates to a lot of the Residential Tenancy Act. Now, The Act covers residential renting arrangements between the landlord and the tenant, and it includes certain types of boarding house arrangements, but it also excludes renting situations that are intended to last for less than 28 days. The type of rental situations the Act doesn't cover include flatting situations, that's where there's an agreement to share a house between tenant and a flatmate. If the renter and their landlord or a member of the landlord's family share the rental home, so the renter and their landlord are effectively flatmates. Private board, where the renter lives in a boarding house not covered by the Act. Student accommodation, holiday accommodation such as holiday homes, hotels and motels, where you rent a place to stay for more than 1 or 2 weeks. Hospitals and rest homes. Commercial tenancies, short-term emergency housing, and if you only rent the land and put your own shelter on it, like a caravan or a tent, and in a camping ground or motor camp, unless you and the operator agreed that you could stay for more than 50 days. Now, the Act does not apply to your renting situation. What your rights and obligations are depends on what you have in your agreement. Remember, we talked before about making sure that you have a written agreement. If you've got a dispute with your accommodation provider and you cannot resolve this informally, you can make a claim at the disputes tribunal. It is possible, though, to contract into the Residential Tenancy Act if both you, as the landlord or the tenant, agree to do that. And again, templates are available from this on the Tenancy Tribunal, on the Tenancy website.
Okay, thanks, Denise. despite the fact that the news media and publicity tends to provide information about cases that affect people who are renting, we also get inquiries from landlords who are concerned that they are doing the right thing. That is, they are following the regulations, the amended regulations, and they are providing the appropriate kinds of accommodation and services for their boarders, their renters, their tenants. Now, here's an example of one such inquiry. So this client had a boarder and had given the boarder an eviction notice. The client was concerned that the communication and the procedures that she'd followed were appropriate. And so she had phoned the Bureau to find out if, in fact, what she'd done was appropriate and correct. So in talking to the client, we established that she had done everything correctly. And this comes under the heading of boarders. What do you need to consider if you're thinking of taking in a boarder? Again, on the tenancy website, the information is very clearly set out, as Denise has indicated. And so if you are thinking of taking in boarders, you will be under the Residential Tenancies Act if there are rooms for six or more and that these tenancies or these boarding arrangements will be for more than 28 days. Then you will have obligations. But if not, if it's just, say, one or two people, then you need to consider other things. Are you going to be secure sharing your home with somebody who might be sharing your kitchen, bathroom, etc.? Is this in order to supplement income? Do you want the boarder to be a male or a female? How long do you want the boarder to stay? Are you going to provide meals? All those kinds of things. So even if it's not a situation where it's covered by the Tenancies Act, it's a good idea to have a written agreement regardless, so that both parties know clearly what is expected and what can be provided. So if there is in the future some kind of disagreement or confusion, you've got the written agreement, which has been both signed by both parties, to go back to establish what was agreed in the first place. Tenancy Services website has a flat sharing template agreement, which you can download. It's a simple document, but it's clear, and it's an excellent safeguard in the event of there being confusion or disagreement, you know, sometime in the future. So I think we would endorse always having some kind of written agreement, no matter how small your, you know, renting situation is. Okay, back to Denise.
That's right. So, you know, as a tenant, you have obligations. So as a flatmate, you have obligations. And this depends on the agreement that you've made with the flatmates and whether or not you are the tenant. If you're the tenant, as David has said, you've got obligations to the landlord or the property manager. If you are the flatmate, so you're not the one that signed the tenancy agreement, you'll have obligations to your flatmate or flatmates that you are tenants with. So these obligations, and these are the things that you want to make sure that you've got in writing, that you share a proportion of the bond when you move in, that you'll pay your share of the rent and utilities bills as required, that you'll give an agreed amount of notice if you want to leave the flat, and ideally your rights and obligations as a flatmate will be recorded in a flat sharing agreement. However, if you don't have a written agreement, you'll still have any other obligations that you've agreed to verbally. The difficulty is that if you haven't got these in writing, then it's difficult to prove these later on. But some of these things would be contributing towards flat expenses. Do you share in the food, etc.? Now, as David said, you can find a template for a flat or house sharing agreement on the Tenancy Services website. And it is really our recommendation and worthwhile to go through that prior to moving in. Particularly if you're a first-time flatter and not knowing of the fishhooks. If you're a boarder in a boarding situation and it's not covered by the Residential Tenancy Act, so you're in a private boarding situation, less than six people, what your rights will depend on the agreement that you negotiate with the landlord. Since you're not covered by the Act, it's a good idea, again, to have that in writing so that everyone knows where they stand. If you and the person who you're boarding with have a dispute which can't be resolved through discussion, you can apply to the Disputes Tribunal. And another option is through mediation. If you want advice on this, whether it's reasonable and about negotiating terms, give us a call and we can help you to work through that.
Okay. So one last case. this is a client who had a boarder, and the boarder was proving to be unsatisfactory, and the client wanted the boarder to leave. Now, there was no formal contract or agreement, nothing in writing. So in this case, the boarder had said that there would need to be 3 months' notice, and our client wanted to know if this was correct. Well, this is a boarding arrangement. Our advice was that the client should give anything from 1 to 3 weeks' notice. And that if the client took another boarder in the future, that they actually had a written agreement before they started. So notice periods would be stipulated and agreed to and signed off so that this situation wouldn't occur again. We recommended the client go to a link that we have on our Citizens Advice Bureau website. I don't have a written agreement with my boarder. How do I make them leave? Now, the information there will tell the reader that if there's no notice period agreed to, you need to give a reasonable period of notice. How much is reasonable? The website suggests anything from 1 to 3 weeks, which was the advice that we gave. But it, the website concludes by pointing out that it is always best to have a signed written agreement which covers these sorts of situations. Now, let's suppose that as sometimes happens, the boarder refused to leave. Well, then the next step would be to consider a trespass notice. Perhaps it would be sensible to discuss that first before going to getting a trespass notice. But without a signed agreement, these sorts of difficult little niggling problems arise. So regardless of the situation that you're in, a signed agreement is always a sensible option. Okay, so just to remind you again that Tenancy Services website is an excellent resource for all this information, and an alternative is to go to the Citizens Advice Bureau general website, and in the Ask Us window, type in your questions, and you will get information that relates to those questions with links to relevant government agencies such as Tenancy Services that will reinforce the information on the CAB website. Okay, so anything else, Denise?
No, I've just reinforced what you're saying about getting things in writing. And normally when people go into a new situation, whether it's a flatting or a boarding situation or a new fixed or periodic tenancy agreement, there's a bit of a honeymoon period. Mm. It all seems quite glossy. Mm. But things can turn sour very quickly. Please make sure that you get it in writing.
Yes, that's right. The honeymoon can be over quite soon. Okay. Thank you, everybody. And we'll be back again next month.
Thank you.
Ngā mihi.
This show was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kanepas, Hawke's Bay's community access radio station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for enabling us to put Hawke's Bay voices on air.